how do you want your relationship with your source, with your soul to be? Do you want it to be once, twice, three times removed where you're watching at a distance or you have that connection at a distance? Or do you want to be able to see the light, which is the hand and the heart and the eyes of the creator in every single experience? Hello and welcome to Spiritually Hungry.
Hello.
Hello. Very excited about today's conversation.
It's a very important one.
It's a very powerful consciousness to work on having and keeping. It is about how to navigate dark times, but it's actually so much more than that, because I think most people have maybe tools of how to cope and get through dark times until we get to the other side of it. I think what we're going to propose today is something that is quite different. It's not about coping, but it's about loving dark times and appreciating them for what they are.
Right. So to understand them and transform them. So I strongly believe that if our listeners both hear what we have to say and use these this wisdom and tools, you will see a real transformation in your life, because I think we're all happy in the happy times, but we're too often unhappy in the more challenging. And challenging, by the way, is a whole gamut, right?
It could be the smallest annoyance to
something truly difficult. But there's a way to really experience at least most of them in a different way.
To be human is to experience challenges. And it could be a job loss. It could be a health scare. It could be a relationship breakdown. And then what that leads us to are feelings of fear and doubt, pain and sadness. And then often we can get stuck in that state, and then we ruminate about those feelings over and over again. And before you know it, that becomes the state of who you are, and that becomes your character, because the thoughts lead to character and then to action.
I was going to say that I think you touched upon what is maybe the most important thought and understanding for our listeners. And that is that no matter how difficult this is to accept, most of the time, we are responsible for holding on to the negativity, to the darkness, to the chaos. As my father would often say, we hug our chaos. And again, if you ask most people, I think they'd say, what are you talking about? I don't want to keep thinking about negative things. I don't want to keep experiencing a dark moment.
But the reality is,
for the most part, are responsible for the negativity that we feel and experience.
I often use the example of, imagine your negative thoughts are a house guest that is just terrible. They're not clean. They stink up the place. They're there far too long. They keep a mess, clutter. There's no clarity because there's things all over the place. And that's really, negative thoughts are that in our own head, right? We allow it to stay there far too long. We let it stay there rent free, and we never ask it to leave. And I think if we look at those thoughts that we have, or the way we respond to the things that we see as being negative, right? Because most things that are negative aren't so much what we're experiencing, it's how we view them. So if you realize that you are the owner, right? And this is just a visitor, and you can choose what to do with it. So the first thought I think that I want to share is that nothing negative comes into our lives on its own. Again, it's how we think about it. So darkness begins in consciousness, not in circumstance. I would say that's the first idea under this umbrella of what we're going to discuss. One of the most profound Kabbalistic teachings is that darkness doesn't begin when it appears physically. Problems don't start when they manifest in the external world. They start when we have a fall or a dip in consciousness. I think we just drop the mic on that idea, because I think most people think like, I was fine a month ago, or like, I wish I could go back a year ago. But what we don't realize is that, well, where were our thoughts? Where were our consciousness? Maybe we didn't see the manifestation of that until today. And we're responding to what we're experiencing today, but nothing ever starts. There's no suddenly, right?
I think it's a very important idea that we, with our consciousness, often precipitate a negative situation for ourselves.
Like, let me just give three examples.
Sure.
So if somebody has financial struggles, if they look back 5 years, for 5 years consistently, were they worried about scarcity and lack and never having enough, right? If there's relationship conflicts, did it start now where you see yourself in the relationship and it's not a positive one? Or was their resentment building because things were never discussed for the 5 years prior to the moment you find yourself. And we could look at any situation and say, okay, well, the root of it really isn't in this moment. It started long ago, which again takes us back to our thoughts. I think that when a problem comes into our lives, we want it to quickly go away. How do we solve this problem? How do I find a solution to this issue I find in front of me? It's not about the specific thing that's right here today. How did it get here? Who brought it here?
That's important.
And how do we get it to go? So basically what I am suggesting is that the root of all of our problems really isn't the problem, but it's about a lack of connection to our soul. And usually the more that we are connected to ego, right, the desire to receive for self alone, selfishness, the more chaos that invites into our lives. Whereas if we spent time connecting to our soul, not only would we view the things that happen differently, but also the things that happen would be different.
I think it's a very, you touched on it again, a very important point. I think I might have mentioned this either in the previous podcast or recently. One of, and it's always not a new concept, but a different way of understanding it. And for me, it really clarified this point. Ego, right? That sense of self-importance, that selfishness that is innate to the human experience, the more it is, meaning the more ego one has, the less room there is for what we call the light of the creator, for blessings. So there's, and that's why there's an ancient teaching from the Kabbalists that say, be very, very diligent in your work with diminishing your ego. And they use the word very, very. Why do they repeat themselves? Because every step that you take to diminish your ego, every step that you take to diminish your selfishness, you are allowing that much more light in. And again, you literally choose every single day to either grow your ego, your selfishness, your false sense of self-importance towards others, or you diminish it. And if you diminish it, you're allowing more light and blessings into your life. It's that simple.
Also, when something negative happens and we view it that way and we can't see it as something that could be an opportunity for great joy, right? Like how many times in our lives is something that's been really ultimately the best experience of our lives, we view it as the darkest and therefore we never find the gem that's waiting for us in that ugly package. You know, I often say that the greatest gifts, it's not wrapped in the shiny ribbon and beautiful wrapping paper. It comes in a brown paper bag that has like oil stains and it's crumbled and you don't even want to open it because you're not sure what's in it. And the greatest gift is in that.
Right. I think, and this is maybe for me the most important teaching around this idea of negative experiences. The Kabbalists teach that every blessing that comes into our life comes what's called, with a in ancient Kabbalistic words, a klipa, a shell. Which means, like you said, that especially the greatest gifts in life are going to come in a form or in a cover that seems to be not positive, as a matter of fact, negative. I always use the example, you know, most of us know Moses, the greatest prophet, the greatest teacher, spiritual teacher that ever lived. And most of us know the story of the righteous Moses, the great Moses, the leader. But in reality, he was born with so many negative traits. And it was his transformation. So the shell around the born Moses was one that was very dark.
What were some of the negative traits?
A selfishness, right? Ego, all that naturally. And all kinds of desires and just literally almost anything negative you can imagine about a human being, he had it within his nature. And it was the transformation, the spiritual work that he did that allowed him to transform that, you know, darkness that surrounded his great gift and allowed the gift of his soul not only to be revealed for himself, but maybe more importantly, to be revealed for humanity, to be revealed for us. So that's a spiritual rule that we have to accept, that preceding any great blessing, the blessing is going to appear as a dark moment, as a dark time. The second part is maybe even more important. And that is,
by the way, I just want to say, like, if you think back, any of our listeners, right? If you think back to your life so far, and you think back to your greatest memories or the ones that are deeply embedded in you that seem to be the most profound ones, like if I just do like a scan of my life so far. Yeah, I'll remember moments where we had like this great trip with the kids or like a moment where we sat around the fire and told stories, I have a warm and fuzzy feeling. But the most profound, clear memories I have are the ones that I experienced great pain. And then because I looked for the blessing in it, great appreciation and connection and growth. And so my stronger memories are actually the ones that came through pain, but the memory isn't pain. The memory is beautiful. It's profound and it's life altering.
Can you give an example?
I mean, there's so many. I think that if I just scan all of my life, right? Like when I've shared the story I've written about when my uncle became schizophrenic, it was one of the scariest times of my life before my very eyes. But then it helped me give birth to a book so many years later, right? Where that was the first time I realized that I had fear and what fear was, right? So that was a great opportunity for me. Had I not experienced that at seven, then I don't know when that next memory would be. But the fact that it was so profound at that age gave me this understanding of the journey of fear, right? When I had anorexia, you know, it made me really understand that I can no longer be small and punishing and have a negative voice in my head, that I had to learn to love myself. What a gift. Had I not had that experience, who would Monica today be? With our son, Josh, had he not come into the world in the way that he did, being so different and having Down syndrome, I had not had that experience. I mean, that was probably the most profound change to who I am as a person, as a mother, as a woman, as a wife. What a gift, right? So it's those moments, if I look, you know, that's really what it is. And I think that that's what we're saying, is to reframe your struggles as a blessing, because that's really truly what it is meant to be. Nothing bad comes from light and everything is light.
Right. But I think the second part of this is maybe the most profound part. And that is that we, through our consciousness, keep a situation painful or dark. For the most part, again, there are extreme examples of this, and those yes. are different. But for the most part, when we're going through a process that's feeling negative, and as we said before, there's great light within that package. But as you think about this situation, and you're saying consciously or unconsciously, but you're saying to yourself, this is a negative situation, what you're actually doing, and this is kind of crazy to think about, you're forcing the light and the blessing in that situation to remain concealed, mm-hmm. to remain confined, to remain imprisoned in that situation. So yes, initially when it came in, there was, oh no, I don't want this, or what is this, right?
Why? Exactly.
But then every moment after that we keep thinking, oh, this is bad, this is wrong, this shouldn't be happening, what we're actually doing is forcing the great light and blessing from that situation that is meant to be revealed to us as goodness, as a blessing, we force it to remain concealed. And if we're able, and this is why this idea is so important, because I promise you, and I've done this, and I know many people that I speak with and teach have done this. When you change your consciousness about a situation, when you simply say, I know this is from the light of the Creator, I know there's great light and blessings within it, and I'm going to wait for it to be revealed, it will be revealed to you. Most times you'll see that revelation. But just to step back and to realize that we are responsible for keeping darkness dark, for not allowing the great light in that situation from becoming revealed to us. That's the power that we have on the one hand, and it's our responsibility to change our thoughts around situations and moments in order to allow the great light from within them to become revealed.
By the way, it's so profound. And I want to give this example because I think that for a lot of people, that's a big stretch. You know, they're not really from where their consciousness is today, although they desire it to be different. Certainty is something we have to work for every single day, right? So if you don't feel like you have the ability in the moment to say, okay, I see the gift, right? I don't want you to fake it. Ask the Creator, ask for the light to come in and show you. And I remember really practicing that in times where I couldn't find the light in the pain, where there wasn't an explanation, I would wake up every single day and I would say to the Creator, I can't see it. Please show me why this has happened. I want to know. I want to grow. I want to learn from it. And it always, like that one, the first time I ever did that was, I'm going to say like 15 years ago, there's one specific thing I could not see the light in. I was in pain about it for a while. I asked every day, and it took 3 months. But then I got the answer as clear as day, and it changed my life for the better again. So that is a really big tool. Ask for assistance. And it reminds me that it says that the creator's hands and eyes are in everything. So what does that mean? And you gave this example recently, right? Whereas if you're a parent to a small child, you are watching them, especially if you parent like you, Michael, like a hawk, right? Every move, you want to make sure they're okay. If they're walking or they're learning to walk, you're right there kind of over them, making sure that they're safe and they're okay. As children get older, you take that, well, I'm not going to call it helicopter parenting, but you take that very specific kind of eye, right, and hand over them, and it's at more of a distance, right? And that's really the choice we have here. How do you want your relationship with your source, with your soul to be? Do you want it to be once, twice, three times removed, where you're watching at a distance, or you have that connection at a distance? Or do you want to be able to see the light, which is the hand and the heart and the eyes of the creator in every single experience? And I really think by asking the question, you already invite that reality into your life.
The only thing I would add to that is that you mentioned understanding, and sometimes
I know I use that word a lot, and you don't like, you say, what do you
say? It's not that I don't like it. I think it's often unnecessary, right?
To understand, it's more to
know
an experience. Right?
Like, for instance, something, again, it could be the smallest annoyance, and we all have these throughout the day, and sometimes they're bigger, often they're smaller. And to say, you know, I need to understand, or even to ask the light of the creator to make me understand. No, I just want whatever this is for, meaning I know it's for my benefit. So this annoying phone call that I just got, or this dark moment, I don't necessarily want to understand why did I have to have. I just know that there's light going to be revealed from it. And it might happen in the next minute, and it might happen in the next day. But awakening that internal thought, and I think this is really an important, you know, meditation mantra that is worth repeating. I don't understand why this is happening. I just know with certainty that it's going to be good for me in revealing great blessings and revealing goodness for me. And the more you can remind yourself of that, the less you're paying attention to the annoyance or the negativity that's going on, and the more you're actually just waiting for the light from it to be revealed for you.
And so the creator would be involved in every nuance of your life. So it's not that even to see this moment is perfect and this, that, it's more knowing, I was going to say understanding, that the handiwork of the creator is in every single experience of your time here on earth. And that's a challenge.
Absolutely.
But it's a beautiful thing once you do. It's actually quite liberating. And I think that that's when I really started to enjoy it more, where I was like, I don't really have to worry about this. I don't have to worry about it because the creator's hand is in it. And ultimately, there is a blessing there, and it frees you from all of that mental struggle, the ruminating, as we spoke about at the beginning, the worries, the doubts, the fears, the pain, the sadness. Like, okay, this is where I give this to you. Show me what I need to see.
I think that's again another very important point, that part of what upsets us and causes us to feel negative moments, negative emotions at different things that happen, is because we have this false belief that we have to create, that we have to, you know, direct our lives, so otherwise it's not going to happen, right? Now, of course, the reality is, and there's a famous, I think it's Milton Friedman who used the example, he would pick up a pencil, right? And he would say, you know how many millions of people have to be involved in the creation of this pencil? The lead and the wood and the factories and the travel. I mean, just millions of people just for me to be holding a, you know, a $5 pencil, whatever it is. And think about that as it relates to your life. We're never going to do, never, never going to do everything we need to do. Not possible. But with the light of the creator, right? That force, that benevolent force that is, that wave that is bringing me, if I open myself up to it, to where I need to be, to what I need to do, then everything is possible. And I think you use the word surrender, which is a very, very powerful word. In the context of, you know, I often, you know, there's different ways to visualize that force. But again, imagine this wave, and you can fight the wave, right? So the wave is taking you to goodness, taking you to light, taking you to manifest all the amazing things you're meant to manifest. You can spend, you know, all day. Some people spend their whole life swimming against the wave and fighting and, you know, raging against it. Why is this wave taking me here or taking me? Or you could say, no, there's this, I'm going to go with it. And then what we can do will be limitless. otherwise, if we still maintain that consciousness that I need to be doing, you know, you can be fighting that. You know, there's a famous Buddhist quote that I wanted to mention. They say that we want happiness and yet chase our suffering.
Yeah.
and that's often what we do.
I
and
like again, that one. I'm going to use that.
Because we're fighting against what is. We're fighting against what is, you know, and trying to understand it sometimes, or just simply fighting against the wave. No, let the wave take you. The wave is taking you to the most amazing place.
But people
the wave,
are so afraid of we, the unknown. I know.
But the reality is, again, I think the fallacy of the other thought, which is I am going to do it even when I'm...
Or I'm in control and I know. We never do. So basically, it's just like face the truth here, which is the only thing we know is that everything is unknown.
And to add to that there's this benevolent good force that is this wave that can take me there if I accept it. The more I fight the wave, the longer it'll take me, or maybe I'll never get there. So it's not just that it's a nice spiritual thought. Okay, I'll accept that there's light here, you know, and I'll accept that there's this positive force with me and directing me in life. If you fight that, you're literally fighting a good force that is meant to bring you to goodness. And it's possible not to get there. It's possible not to get there.
It's interesting. Since you've lost both your parents. I've lost one of my parents. I find it interesting, I don't know, maybe somehow comforting to study or read about death and what happens, Kabbalistically speaking, to a soul right in the moments of when the soul leaves the body. And
it's funny, just that I was reading Rumi's When I Die.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So I read something last week which I kind of knew, but I read it in more detail, that when a person leaves this world, the first thing that the creator asks the soul is, tell me your name. And most people don't remember their name. And Kabbalists explain, we're not referencing, you know, how did the world call you, but your name is your soul, right? Your essence. So basically the question is, what did your soul do in this lifetime? Which is just like, and I like thinking about that thought every day.
Because did you live up to your potential?
Right. And it's interesting because years ago, I remember I was at a restaurant, and this is when I first started to kind of think about it, this idea, and then I found this section that we just talked about. I was speaking to the server, and he was really nice, and his name was Carlos. And I said, oh, my name's Monica. I actually knew a couple named Carlos and Monica, and we got on the subject of names. And then he turned to me, and he said, oh, so he's like, Monica? I said, yeah, like Santa Monica, because we were in Beverly Hills. Like, we live in LA, California. And he said, but the question is, are you living up to your name? And he was meaning Saint Monica, right? But right away, I understood, like, wow, like, am I, right? And not that I'm a saint, but why not strive to be saintly? But then as I was thinking about this podcast, I came across another Kabbalist teaching about the greatest pain a soul has when they leave this world. And at that moment, they see the moments in their life that they saw were the worst when they were living, right? When they were in this physical plane. And when they are no longer in the body, they see those worst moments, but then they say, oh my God, that was actually meant to be the best moment of my life. There was so much light and blessing in that. And I just thought, wow, like again, right? Because what happens at death, and I know that's not really what the intention of this podcast, but I think to talk about death is very sobering. And I think it's such an important thing to talk about because it informs how you live your life.
It should, at least.
I think that if you are being honest with yourself and not running from that idea of what is part of life is death, right? Like we were saying, running from the wave. I mean, this is a wave too. That I think that if you hear about these things, it has the ability to kind of wake you up and say, wait a second, right? I don't want to experience that pain when I don't have options anymore, right? Maybe I'll come back in another incarnation or there'll be other things. But like in that moment, that's it. So those things really inspire me.
I just want to underscore,
like, even the moments we're most embarrassed about, right? Those have the potential to be the most light filled. But the ego is saying, no, 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 that's dark. That's black. That's all negativity. And we believe it. Right?
I want to underscore what you just said, which again, something that I've been thinking about a lot recently, right? That idea that, you know, when the soul leaves the body, it's going to look back at all those dark moments, those that the individual allowed to remain dark, and say, oh my God, there was so much blessing there that I just ran away from or didn't allow to be revealed. It reminds me of one of my more favorite stories. I don't think I've shared on the podcast, but it's a relatively lengthy one, but I think it is worth sharing.
Should I get some popcorn?
Yes. So the story is about a great Kabbalist who's traveling through a certain town. And as he comes by this house, you know, when you're spiritually connected, you can sense things that most people don't or can't. And suddenly he started smelling a beautiful smell from that house. So he had to stop. He stops his, you know, his carriage. He gets off the carriage. He goes to the house. He knocks on the door. And he says to the owner who answers the door, he says, you know, there's something so beautiful, a beautiful smell that's coming from this house. I have to find it, where it's coming from. He says, do you mind if I look, if I follow this sense? And he recognized the great Kabbalist. So he said, of course, you know, anything you want. Of course, he offered him food and drink as well. And the Kabbalist walking through the house. It wasn't a very big house. And he's walking to one room to the other. And finally, he sees that there, where the smell is coming from. And it's from the back closet.
I love this story.
And he opens the closet and he goes all the way in the back of the closet. There was this crumpled clown suit. And he says, this suit smells so beautiful, like the Garden of Eden. It's the most beautiful smell I've ever smelled, which meant there's so much light in here. And as he brings out the clown suit, he realizes that the owner, you know, is really crestfallen. He's upset. He's sad. He says, tell me the story of this clown suit, because there's something very powerful here. And the man says, well, I'll tell you the story. But he clearly was embarrassed. He says, you know, I used to be a very prominent person in town. When anybody needed help, assistance, they would come to me. And there was an orphan girl whose marriage was coming up. And she didn't have enough money to pay for the wedding. And they came to me. Is there anything I can do? I can help. Maybe I can go around the townspeople and ask them to support, to share. So I go from door to door. I raise a certain amount, not enough for the wedding. And as most little towns had in those days, there was this tavern where there was a pub. And it's late at night, and I walk into the pub, and I start asking people. There was a very wealthy man sitting there at the bar with his friends, very, very drunk at this point. And I say it, and I get to them, and I say, listen, I'm raising money. This orphan girl needs to get is getting married. She wants money to pay for her wedding. And the drunk man, who is not a very kind man, but wealthy, says to him, you know what? I'll give you the money, whatever you need. He says, yes. Like, he's getting excited. He can help. He says, but I have something to request. He says, I need you to put on a clown suit and walk with us through town. And if you do that, I'll give you all the money that you need. And the guy's thinking, like, walking around with a bunch of six very, very drunk people and 2 o'clock in the morning, probably not going to look good for him, but he doesn't know what to do. And his soul says, you know, I need to do whatever I can to raise this money. So he acquiesces. He puts on the clown suit. And you could imagine what it would sound like as they go through town and they're singing and they're laughing and they're loud and they're banging on windows and everybody's opening up the windows and they recognize the wealthy guy and the drunks and his friends, but they look at this guy who they thought was a very respectful, important member of the community, and he's with them in a clown suit. So there wasn't a house that didn't open up its window or its door to look at this, and one can imagine how embarrassed, how crestfallen he must have been. And he tells the Kabbalist, he says, at the end of the night, this went on for about 2 hours, everybody in town was disgusted by the scene and by me, of course. So by the time I got home, I took the suit, I threw it in the back of the closet. I didn't want to think about that night ever again. Nobody in town ever looked at me ever the same. And the Kabbalist says, I want you to know that there's nothing that you have done or can do or will do in your life that will reveal as much light and blessings for you and for your soul as that night with the clown suit. And that's why I ask you that when your time comes to leave this world, make sure that you ask the burial society to bury you in that clown suit, because with that clown suit, there are no gates that will be closed for you.
It's beautiful.
The lesson, many lessons, I think, from this story. But one of the most important ones is that often it is those very dark moments that had the greatest amount of light and actually maybe the purpose for which we came into this world.
It reminds me, last week I was in LA and I was giving a lecture at somebody's house and I didn't know whose house it was. And I didn't know, it was all new people in the room. And at the end of my talk and in the talk, I mentioned that about Josh and that he was born with Down syndrome for the context of the story, because he said something really profound, but you wouldn't understand how profound it was unless you understood the totality of Josh. Anyway, at the end of the night, as I was leaving, the owners of the house, so they have 4 children and one of the daughters opened the homes, but the parents were there. They were taking notes. They were sitting on the steps, like, because it was full. And I just was so impressed with, because I noticed them as I was speaking. And then when I was leaving, I saw that the father was putting the chairs away. And I was like, no, absolutely not. Like, you should not. Let me help you. And anyway, I started talking to the parents, and the mom comes to me, and their kids are probably like 30, the youngest girls. There's two girls and two boys. And the mom comes to me and she says, you know, my first child was born with Down syndrome. I don't think I even told you this, did I? And I said, wow. And right away, we looked at each other with like a look of acknowledgement. Like, and then I looked at the kids. We all looked at each other. And I knew how their lives were changed having a sibling born with Down syndrome. And I understood the parents. And it's just knowing that you have experience. And we look at each other and we're like, it's the greatest blessing. And then we talked about, you know, it was their firstborn. For us, it was our second. We started going into this whole thing. But I think it was a really powerful moment for me because, again, for many reasons, you don't know anybody's story. You don't know how we're all connected in so many invisible ways. But also the beauty of, you know, and I don't know if they're, I don't really know anything about them, right? They were kind, for sure. They opened their house to a stranger to give a lecture to strangers to come in. But you don't know anybody's story or movie, but we both had the same experience and arrived at the same place with that. So that was a beautiful example because I know many people who have had things happen and they just can't ever get past the hurt, you know?
Or they think is the hurt and or the challenge and or the pain.
And so they stay in that, right?
So I think, I hope for our listeners from this episode that to understand that you have the power to transform almost every single challenge, almost every single dark moment into great light. Just allow for it to happen. Mm. Actually, I had a letter I was going to read, but we're a little bit...
It doesn't take long to read a letter.
Oh, it's a long letter and it's a good one. So I want to save it for next time. But I do want to remind all of our listeners to keep sending your letters, comments, topic ideas to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. We really enjoy hearing from you. We read every letter that you send. We share many of them with our listeners. They inspire us. They inspire our listeners. So please make sure to continue sending your letters, comments, and topic ideas to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. Also, as always, make sure you share this podcast with everybody you know. Make sure you go to Apple Podcasts, write 5-star reviews, and share this podcast with more and more people so that the wisdom that we share and the light that we share continues to grow exponentially. We hope you enjoy listening to the podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.